Every day you see some poll, some insight into how people shop, relax, vacation, choose their job, pick a favorite beer, and how they say they will vote. Have you ever wondered who the people are who gather all of that information? What do they do? How many people do they have to talk to, and what kind of training do you need to speak to and gather information from thousands of people? In this episode of Careers That Matter, the insightful Mario Canseco takes us on his career journey. Mario Canseco, you have a really interesting job. How do you define what it is?
It's asking Canadians questions, asking Americans questions, asking people around the world. I think it's an extension of the job I used to have as a journalist. You're used to asking questions to one person or two at a time. Now you get to ask them to a representative sample. Having that curiosity about whether how you feel about things is the way the rest of the country, the rest of the city, the rest of the province feels. And it's definitely the most rewarding job I've ever had.
How did you get here? Like, what was your career path? But let's go back even further. What was the education that led you into these different aspects of your career? Because somebody might be looking at you going, I want to be you in the future. What can I learn from the path that you took to get here? And is that the only path? So,
it's a very open business in that sense. You know, I've met people who studied statistics and work in this field, people who studied communication. I studied communication. I worked a little bit as a journalist in Mexico before coming to Canada to pursue a master's of journalism at UBC. I had fantastic professors who helped me along the way. I started working in polling in 2003 at the Liu Institute for Global Issues. And that's where I developed a taste for looking into the way people felt, how to ask questions also, which is important. You know, there's always this idea of you get the numbers, you look at the way people are feeling, and then you start to question, well, is this the best way to ask a question related to traffic or drug legalization or anything of the sort? So by the time I was able to start working on actually developing questionnaires, I was ready because of all of the research that we had conducted when I was at the Liu Institute.
So you studied journalism from print perspective, or was it broadcasting as well?
It was broadcasting as well. I originally thought film was going to be my thing. Then I realized how difficult it is to get anything done. And it's kind of ironic because now the Mexican film scene has exploded because of the sheer talent of the people who are conducting many of these films. But it's interesting. I looked at radio more than anything. I worked at the college radio station, a little bit of comedy, a little bit of news. Worked as a news reporter for a while in Mexico. And usually what happens is they send you to the police beat for a couple of weeks to try to see if you're meant to handle this.
Right.
I lasted my full 2 weeks. And when I talked to the editor, he said, nobody's lasted more than 3 days. So you get your pick to do whatever you want. And I chose sports. I wanted something super easy after my experience in the police beat in Mexico City, which I learned a lot.
Can't begin to imagine.
But I would not do it again.
Yeah, no. It was tough, huh?
Well, especially, you know, there's this sense of looking into specific issues from the standpoint of the story and having to ask tough questions to somebody who has just been through a difficult scenario, difficult situation. The city was not as violent as it sadly has become, but it was definitely a learning experience, but not something that I would do again. And it helped me become a better reporter and also helped me become a better man.
So do you classify yourself as being a pollster or, a social researcher?
Well, it's kind of a combination of both. I think part of the situation, there's this assumption that polling is only voting intention numbers before an election. And I think it's more the work that you do before the election when you ask people about issues like LGBT rights, even what kind of food you like. You know, you're always looking into that curiosity side of you that is not related to who you're going to vote for or not. And there's this obsession with the horse race, which I understand, and I love doing elections. But it's not something that is going to lead you to understand how the electorate operates. I think it's something that you do every day by asking people questions, not just when the election rolls around.
Well, I get your postings, and I see you online and in social media, and I go, huh? You're releasing a poll about whether or not people are vegan or not.
Yes.
So why is it important that we start to understand these things with greater access to informed information than we used to get in the past?
Well, what I like about the job now, because of the way data collection operates, is that you have so many data points to look into. And it feeds into that curiosity. You know, if you're a conservative voter, you're more likely to eat this particular food or partake in this particular activity. If you're somebody who does sports, are you more likely to vote for specific parties that are deemed more progressive? And that feeds into that curiosity. I think I go back to the way in which the Obama campaign was organized back in 2008 when they were looking into data points that had nothing to do with politics. They wanted to know if you watch the NFL, if you watch NASCAR, if you were somebody who did yoga. Like, they looked into so many different things to know which doors to knock on. And it worked out beautifully. I mean, he won Indiana, which is incredible.
Yeah.
He lost it in 2012, but, you know, it's an important situation.
He still won a lot. Yeah.
About, you know, knowing who to talk to, knowing how to engage. And I think it goes far beyond just knocking on a door and saying, are you voting for our party or not? That's not going to get you anywhere.
So as you're doing this research, I'm beginning to wonder whether or not you have the answer to the question is, how do you define what is a Canadian?
Well, I think it's an interesting dilemma, and I found myself many times disagreeing with the findings of the survey, thinking, well, Canada's going to feel this way about this issue because I feel this way about this issue. And sometimes you disagree, and, you know, you have to just go out there and be the vessel. You know, I'm not here talking as Mario. I'm here talking about as the guy who asked 1,000 Canadians, and this is what we came up for. And, you know, this is the situation that we face. I think having had the opportunity to work in the U.S. and the U.K. as well, you look into specific things that are unique to us. And I think one of them is the way in which we look at each other. There's very low numbers of people who say, I don't want this in my house. I don't want to have a new development near me. This idea of we're all in a community and we're all together definitely works a lot better when it comes to the numbers than if you ask Americans or if you ask Britons.
So you're saying there's less NIMBYism here then?
Yes. I know it's quite shocking in a way because people tend to complain about this in a very different manner. But when you look at certain findings in the U.S. or the U.K., for instance, that there seems to be more of a polarization and more of a way in which you're not looking into things in the same fashion. There's the racism aspect, of course, and I think everybody has faced discrimination at some point in their lives for a wide range of reasons. The numbers are always lower here. It's not that it means less. It's not that it's something that we need to eradicate.
Yeah.
But I definitely like that. I mean, I think I'm a long shot. You know, I'm the only one doing this job who wasn't born here.
So I'm trying to remember the play that my daughter read me a line from, an American play. But the line was, and it was referring to the United States, a melting pot that didn't melt.
Yeah.
Whereas in Canada, are we truly becoming that multicultural country that is accepting of this blend of cultural backgrounds?
I see it a lot with the millennial generation. When you ask questions related to issues that are painful to Canadians, such as residential schools, they're more likely to have read about them. They're more likely to know that it was wrong. They're more likely to appreciate everything that First Nations culture means to the country. The numbers are lower for Generation X, definitely low for over 55. So I have a lot of hope that this generation that is learning how to do things, learning different ways of dealing with the realities of the country, because we're not a perfect country, of course. But there's a situation there where you're looking into your past and there's got to be some sort of moment when you realize that things were wrong and we shouldn't repeat them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the reasons why the idea of, you know, let's say no to immigration and the country is closed is not really resonating. We don't see people who are advocating for those ideas climbing the charts when it comes to voting intention.
Do you follow much what's happening with our relationship with Indigenous peoples? Because we're talking about more than 600 individual nations that all got scooped up under the umbrella of Canada, and we have not resolved this issue. But is there a growing appetite to do so?
There is. You know, one of my wonderful experiences at UBC was taking a course in Aboriginal policy with Doug MacArthur, who's now at SFU. And I learned a lot. I was coming in from the Mexican perspective as far as, well, how do you deal with this and what happens? And you're essentially coming from a country that has always been proud of its Indigenous heritage in a way, to a place where discussions were more about land claims and what was happening. We had the Nishka Treaty happening just a few months before I came to Canada. And you start to learn about this. And the more you learn, the more you understand that it's something that needs to be dealt with. We asked Canadians just a few months ago about how reconciliation was going. And there was definitely a sense of dismay. There was a sense of, you know, we're not taking this to the level where we should be taking it. And there's definitely a sense of dissatisfaction with the way the federal government has dealt with this file. And there's always an opportunity. I think it's something that needs to be addressed. And I think that the fact that the younger generations are more in tune with where we should be moving on this makes me more hopeful.
You talked about getting a sampling of 1,000 people. Makes me wonder, what does your day look like? Like, how busy are you? And what are the things that you have to do in addition to doing interviews like this one?
Well, it's a lot of fun. I mean, also, we have to pay the bills, right? There's clients who want to know what is happening with their campaign, with their product, with their association. But there's always an opportunity to feed that aspect of my life, which is that curiosity. Just wondering what is going to be happening and trying to figure out a way to break some of those stereotypes. I've been told that I'm an extremely unpopular guy at parties because I hear people say, well, Canadians feel this way. And then you're able to say, well, I asked them last week, and 70% disagree with you. So, you know, sometimes they don't have me back because of that.
But clients do. And so yes. Your business is funded by client organizations wanting to actually know the truth.
Yes, which is important. I think we have reached a situation where data collection can be very cheap, but you're also getting what you pay for. And if you have somebody who's controlling the process from start to finish, who's asking the questions that are wrong, you're going to get into a scenario where 90% of the people will agree with what you asked. But is it the right question? Is it the right way to base a policy or a product launch or anything of the sort? And I have both experiences, you know, going into a meeting and saying to somebody, this is fantastic. Everybody loves what you do. This is the way in which, you know, you should continue. Everything's fine. And then you go to other places where you go, what were you guys thinking? Like, this isn't actually going to pan out the way you imagine it. And it also works that way politically. You know, you talk to people who want to run, and you tell them you have a good chance, this is something that can be very good for you, and then you wind up going to other meetings where you say, this isn't in the cards. Do not mortgage your house for this.
Right. How long are your days?
I don't sleep that much, but it's a lot of fun, partly because you have to
So that's a way of saying you put in long days.
Yeah.
And it's many days.
It's nice to do it for me and to do it for my family. I think that's been the biggest situation over the past 16 months since I decided to do this on my own, to be surrounded by my family, to be doing this because I want to, because I have that curiosity and that opportunity to put information out there. I always believed in making public opinion public. If I ask a question, you'll see it on the website. It's not going to be behind a paywall. It's always going to be there, and I'm always available to answer whatever is required. And it's a lot of fun to engage with people if the engagement is honest and truthful and polite.
Well, thanks for giving us a little glimpse into the exciting, challenging, and clearly rewarding career that you've created for yourself.
It can only happen in a country like ours. I think the life that I've been able to have here, build my family, build my career, would be impossible in any other country.
Well, great testament to our country.